brought to you by Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, jpfo.org.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Edition of the broadcast. It's good to have you joining us tonight. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have kind of a special treat on the program. We talk a lot about Agenda 21 and sustainable development and the United Nations system at work in America. And all of these things are very relevant and important. And tonight we have Mr. American Exposé with us, the guy who founded this broadcast and who's been on the air many years doing it. Chris Gerner is joining us tonight. Chris, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me all right?
You're a little soft, but I can make out what you're saying.
I can turn it up. How about that? Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for having me, my friend.
Hey, thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. We've been doing this all this time, and we've never actually done a broadcast together.
Well, these are pretty ominous times, aren't they? And I'm sure glad you picked up the ball and started running with your broadcast. I've told you before, you know, it's everybody's job. And I certainly started broadcasting to set an example for others to broadcast themselves. And some have dropped off, and I've lost a lot of respect for individuals that quit because we're in a battle, aren't we, Darren?
Well, it's an incredible thing. The odds seem overwhelming, and if you focus on the Goliath part of the whole battle, it certainly can be overwhelming.
Oh boy,
we're definitely. I mean, when you get to the point where you can go to Google and type in sustainable anything and then have something come up, then you know you're in trouble.
Absolutely, and it doesn't stop there. It goes all the way through the federal system. And you know, when you do the research, the State Department has their new website, Sustainable Development Partnerships. The State Department is in control of the Environmental Protection Agency. The Environmental Protection Agency is in control of all the other government agencies, including the Air and Waste Management Association. Have we ever heard of them before?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the structure in place is big. And we're counting down to 16 days into entry into force of the Kyoto Protocol. And, you know, you said it as well. This is an ominous saying, entry into force. What are they going to force on us and the rest of the world with this Kyoto Protocol?
Now when you say 16 days to the enforcement of Kyoto Protocol, Does that mean for those nations that have signed on to the treaty?
I would presume so. However, I have information that states, and this is coming out of the Independent, which states that it says here, out of the, it's entitled Jeremy Warner, Davos makes running on climate change, dated January 31st. And it says the continued absence from the negotiating table of the United States and China only highlights the main objection to multilateral efforts to find solutions, which is that of the two 10-ton gorillas of energy consumption aren't doing it. Then we only cut our own throats by engaging. India, the other big development story in the world stage today, has likewise said that until it has caught up with the West economically, emission controls are something to be confined to the already developed world. Now here it says, even on this front, however, there's reason for hope. Many U.S. states are independently of the administration introducing their own Kyoto-style emissions trading systems, while here in Davos, the Republican Senator John McCain says his own Kyoto-style bill stands a relatively good chance of becoming U.S. law by next year. Regardless of what President Bush wants, in China, too, relatively tough constraints on fuel consumption are being introduced. Still, until a way can be found to bringing America and the developing world on board, all attempts to control emissions are little more than spitting against the wind. Tony Blair perhaps put it best in his speech at the WEF, which is a World Economic Forum, when he said that if America wants the rest of the world to be part of the agenda it has set, then it must be part of their agenda too. And there's much more to this, but that's pretty telling.
Yeah, absolutely.
About the way things are going. And the State Department, you know, and the EPA, they're implementing all sorts of sustainable development directions. I think the ultimate goal is to get people out of their cars, ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of funny that you mention that. I have a piece here, which, you know, I've been tracking the developing of the sustainable communities in the UK. You know, this sustainable community situation is really big in the United Kingdom, but now I'm starting to see more and more news media reports pop up about sustainable communities being developed right here at home. I'm looking for this. I'm looking for this piece right now as I talk to you here. It says, I think this is the one. Sustainable practices called for in forum. It says Lawrence Township is, and this is an article from New Jersey. Lawrence Township has always been a progressive community in preserving its natural assets. It is one of the first towns in Mercer County to participate in the Farmland Preservation Program, and it also has been a Tree City USA. So it's not much of a leap that Lawrence could follow in the footsteps of many towns and cities in Sweden and some communities in this country that have adopted sustainable practices, such as using wind turbines to generate energy or building schools with non-toxic materials. That was the theme of a special conference that was held at the Lawrence School on Saturday. The Greening of Lawrence Township was co-sponsored by Lawrence Township Community Foundation and the Preparatory School. It says sustainable communities are ones that have taken. I skipped around here. I don't want to read the whole thing, but it says an advocate of sustainable communities, Ms. James, urged the audience of about 100 people to adopt the concept in Lawrence. She created the Natural Step System, which helps guide communities seeking to be environmentally friendly places to live and work. Sustainable communities are ones that have taken steps to reduce their reliance on fossil fuels, extracted underground metals and minerals, for example. They also have reduced their dependence on chemicals and other manufactured substances that accumulate in nature. So these sustainable communities, as you see it, Chris, can you provide for us a little picture of what that's going to be like?
Metering of your wells, paying for everything that you have to you don't have to pay for now is the major thought. The price of gasoline skyrocketing, the price of automobiles skyrocketing to the point where you won't be able to afford one, as most people can't afford one right now. That's just a major step. But the intrusion onto your property by the code enforcement agencies of what you can and can't do with your property will continue. If you have a pond on your property and an ecosystem has been created on your pond, they'll want to fence it off, like they've done for the Houston toad for this farmer down in Houston, Texas, for this quote-unquote Houston toad. The continued move for the encouragement of endangered species over human species, which is an invasive species at this point in time because we're overpopulated according to the UN system, is the direction that's in place. And, you know, I see here from the Fish and Wildlife Program, which is part of the Environmental Protection Agency, they say in their fiscal year 2005 notice of availability of federal assistance, they say in fiscal year 2004, the Partners for Fish and Wildlife Program, with a budget of $33.6 million, established partnerships with over 1,900 landowners to restore fish and wildlife habitats. The habitat results included the restoration and improvement of 45,500 acres of wetlands, 320,000 acres of native prairie and grasslands and other uplands, and 342 miles of riparian corridor, stream bank, and in-stream aquatic habitat. In addition, 19 fish passage barriers were removed, meaning dams taken down. Any privately owned land is potentially eligible for restoration. Privately owned, for the purpose of this program, generally means lands not owned by the state or the federal government. So, in other words, private, quote-unquote, landowners can work with the federal government to close off their land for the agenda and the rewilding project and the NAFTA corridors. The whole connecting of the dots to controlling of the property is well underway with the Fish and Wildlife Program. So what do I see on the horizon? Exactly what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading somewhere that these sustainable communities, once they're developed, everything that you need is going to be within a five-mile radius, so that anything that you need, you're able to walk or rollerblade or whatever to get to your destination, and travel is going to be kept to a minimum. Interestingly enough, they're trying to develop one of these things in Naples, Florida. I stumbled upon this maybe a couple of nights ago. This is a website for a sustainable community of the future. They call it Bella Via, and anybody that wants to get to this can go to bellaviacommunity.com. They say the Bella Via is the brainchild of Frank Oaks, a third-generation farmer turned skilled organic grower, and a group of similarly minded colleagues. He says Frank is currently the president of the Florida Organic Growers Association, the largest organization of its kind in the southeastern United States. The concept for Bella Via was birthed during discussions 15 years ago and has evolved over the ensuing years into a vision that is described within this document. Each detail that is mentioned, even briefly, has been thoroughly discussed, researched, and strategized. Various stages of the construction will be completed in different time frames. What follows is the final version. It is believed that Bella Via will serve as the prototype for the sustainable community of the future, and that it is possible for any city of 100,000 or more to support this type of co-created lifestyle. Now listen to this. They say Bella Via is the prototype for a totally new type of intentional community, one that embodies the principles of sustainability, green building materials and techniques, environmentally friendly products, certified organic farming and sustainable agricultural practices, renewable energy sources, social consciousness, holistic health and wellness of body, mind, spirit, and planet. It has been designed to be completely self-contained while utilizing all these principles, yet will offer all of the modern conveniences we have come to depend on and value, truly the very best of all possible worlds. Now, they say the location of the Bella Via is being proposed within a 1 square mile tract of land near Naples, Florida, that has been laser leveled and is immediately ready for certified organic farming. The primary tract contains 640 acres, a 37-acre organic vegetable farm, and 45-acre citrus grove and orchard will supply most of the food needs for residents. Bella Villa will be a gated community with three entrances. Now, we were you talked about cars a moment ago. This
right.
is their automobile policy. They say the plans call for no machines with fossil fuel-burning engines being allowed on the property, including cars, lawnmowers, etc.
Right.
All cars will be parked around the periphery of the property in covered parking garages that surround nearly the entire track. Solar-powered golf carts will transport those who are unable to walk or bike to their homes. There will be sufficient parking spaces to allow individuals to park in close proximity to their homes. The need to own one or more automobiles in Bella Villa will be greatly reduced. A fleet of community-owned and therefore very affordable rental cars will be maintained for those who would need a car occasionally. One of the greatest attractions of the village will be the self-sufficiency aspect and also the low cost of maintaining one's lifestyle. By eliminating the need for one or more cars and all of the subsequent costs, such as maintenance, insurance, etc., a resident's financial burden is reduced. The village is small enough and built in such a way, e.g. pathways, that everyone could easily cycle, walk, or use solar-powered golf cars to move about the community. There will also be a community bus service within the village transporting residents to important places in Naples, the beaches and golf, etc., on a regular basis. Buses will be powered using biodiesel fuel produced at Bella Villa using the grease and fats from the restaurants operating on the grounds and from soy growing on the farm. This is very much an environmentally friendly alternative as compared to regular fuels. So, I mean, when we've said so many times on this program that there's a war on the automobile and the ultimate goal of these people are to eliminate and completely revolutionize your lifestyle, I mean, here's proof at
yes.
BellaVillaCommunity.com. You know what I'm saying, Chris?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And see, the whole engineering of this is well underway, as I see from the Economic Policy Institute, and I'm really not sure who they are, but... the entitlement of this article is the United States damages future living standards by borrowing itself into a deceptively deep hole. It says the United States is currently borrowing $665 billion annually from foreign lenders to finance the gap between payments to and receipts from the rest of the world, an amount equivalent to $5,500 per American household. This borrowing entails serious costs for the U.S. economy. However, these costs have been hidden for the past few years, predominantly by the historically low interest rates, which resulted from the Federal Reserve's attempts to spur economic recovery after the 2001 recession and from a downturn in domestic investment. This happy scenario will not persist indefinitely, but when interest rates rise, the cost of U.S. borrowing will have serious economic consequences. With no government in the current account deficit, the external debt of the United States will rise from 24% to total U.S. gross domestic product at the end of 2003 to 64% by 2014. In other words, what's happening is we're becoming more and more of a bankrupt country, which will demand that we live in sustainable communities and smart communities. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. Because an impoverished people are people that's a lot easier to control.
The pattern is moving us right into it, whether we like it or not. And the American people don't know this. They don't pay attention to this. They don't see it. But you and I do.
Right. And there's a few out there. Hopefully we're not just preaching to the choir, but... you know, it's funny you should mention economics, and I got an article here. This is a, I guess this is an Associated Press article. Economist says China loses faith in dollar. It says China has lost faith in the stability of the U.S. dollar, top Chinese economist says at World Forum. It says China has lost faith in the stability of the U.S. dollar, and its first priority is to broaden the exchange rate for its currency from the dollar to a more flexible basket of currencies, a top Chinese economist said Wednesday at the World Economic Forum. So you were covering that a moment ago, and I just thought I'd throw that in there, you know, because all of this borrowing that's being done right now to pay for the various war ventures of this warring administration, and of course we know all of this was planned out in advance, as the Project for a New American Century report, as I so often refer to, but I think it's very relevant. It was published in September of 2000, so if it was published a full year before the 2000 it was published actually before the 2000 presidential elections. So here we have a situation where a neocon think tank is writing policy for administration that, if we were to believe we have honest elections, might never take place, number one. And number two, they're writing this policy for something that we needed the September 11th pretense to implement. But at any rate, this PNAC report, this whole war was planned in advance. And now they're financing it by borrowing, and all of these countries in Asia and in various other places, but heavily Asia, is financing all of this debt borrowing that we have going on. And now the infrastructure is starting to crack. So you got to ask the question, what's coming? You know, when we have a $7.5 trillion national debt, and this thing continues to climb, I mean, common sense says that you can't continue this way for very long.
Absolutely, and so we connect all these dots to what's going on and what's being driven and directed, and you can't help but be alarmed. You and me and other people out there that do the research and listen and pay attention, you can't help but be alarmed about the future.
Yeah.
According to this Economic Policy Institute, it says the current U.S. international debt path is damaging to future U.S. living standards. The damage has not materialized yet because interest rates have been at historic lows in recent years, making U.S. borrowing extraordinarily cheap. However, it would be irresponsible for economic policymakers in the United States to bank on these low rates. As soon as the interest rates begin to rise in the United States, the full consequences of the U.S. international debt problem will have real bite. The U.S. traded goods sector has a key role to play in bringing the U.S. economy closer to current account balance to boost net exports. The United States needs countries that peg the value of the currencies at low levels relative to the dollar to revalue their currencies. This does not imply that these nations should be encouraged to abandon capital controls and allow their currencies to float. This would, in fact, be a bad idea. Rather, these countries should just allow their currencies to rise to a sustainable level against the dollar in a one-off revaluation. It says here, recent U.S. dollar depreciation against a select group of currencies, especially the euro, is a welcome first step toward returning the current account balance of the United States to a reasonable level. These currencies, however, cannot bear the entire burden of this adjustment. The point is, on our money for all our lifetimes, it said on the front, legal tender for all current, for all debts, public and private.
Mm-hmm.
It's, at this stage of the game, with our military doing what it's doing, with our sons and daughters and fathers and mothers having to go off to seas to fight this next Vietnam in Iraq, and you know, they had elections. I mean, geez.
So my point about that, the elections, is how can they have an election when we can't even have an election here without having international monitors monitor what we do?
Well, you better believe there are international monitors over there. It was us.
Yeah.
We set the damn thing up.
We've met the enemy, and it is us.
Unfortunately. And most of us don't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Michael knew, he keeps fighting his battle. And God bless him for fighting his battle, but this coalition over in the Middle East, that's nothing more than the United Nations system. And for people not to realize that, it's because they don't understand the Secretary of the Treasury and his responsibilities.
Yeah, that's that right there, what you always say about the Secretary of the Treasury. And folks, I've verified this. I've validated this. I looked it up. What he says about that is true. The Secretary of the Treasury being the U.S. Governor of the International Monetary Fund and receives no compensation from the U.S. That's probably about the most telling thing about who we are as a country. I mean, if your Secretary of the Treasury is not even paid for out of funds out of your treasury, but who's paying the guy? He's not working for free.
Right.
So who's controlling the country? Who's controlling the money? You know, and of course the money is really worthless anyway. But the bottom line is the American people are being conditioned to believe that this debt, this national debt, is going to have to be paid for with their children for many years to come. You know, and consequently, our lifestyle is going to be reduced, and we'll understand why when it happens.
Yeah, and it's absolutely incredible. I'm looking for that point about the Secretary of the Treasury on the website. We've added so much to the website lately, I'm having trouble finding it. But that is really telling what you found, where every country has a governor that's a member of the UN and the IMF. You have to be a member of the IMF to be a member of the UN. Every country has a governor. And that must be one heck of a meeting when they meet once a year, I'll bet.
Well, as I recall, there's certain executives that are higher than the governors, I believe. I'm doing this from memory, so if I get it wrong, don't throw a fit. But I believe there's higher officers than the governors who have a higher weight of decision making. I have to go find that again. I looked for it at one point and found it, and I should have bookmarked it, but
that would make sense to me, that the G8 must have some kind of control over the IMF or the G7, the G8 being Russia, the G7 being without Russia, evidently.
I know we got a lot of independent researchers listening, you know, so maybe that would be something for them to dig up and send to us. But
absolutely.
This war situation in Iraq, the headline on the Detroit News and Free Press, it says, U.S. in danger of losing the war. Analysis finds rising fatalities and attacks in Iraq don't bode well. They say unless something dramatic changes, the United States is headed toward losing the war in Iraq. A Knight Rider newspaper's analysis of U.S. government statistics show the U.S. military steadily losing ground. Now, this is, most of the time these media reports seem to try to paint a rosy picture of how well we're doing in Iraq. But they say they're steadily losing ground to the predominantly Sunni Muslim insurgency in Iraq. The analysis suggests that, short of a newfound will by Iraqis to reject the insurgency, and who are these insurgencies, Chris?
Probably the good guys.
Those are the ones that are always being villainized.
Probably the people that that believe in sovereignty in their own country. And I say probably because we don't really know, but we certainly do know that the Mujahideen was supported by our country during the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, and now the Mujahideen are the bad guys. Now, according to that book In Cold Blood by Abdul Shams that I read on the air, our U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, along with the Soviet Union, built the roads going in and out of Afghanistan. The Soviets built the roads north to south. We built the roads east to west. So maybe what they realized is that we're the bad guy too, this Mujahideen.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get down to all this, this UN system that we're a major player in, you connect all these dots to totalitarian control, and then you see it happening here in America through the State Department and all these agencies under the State Department. You connect all the dots.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial.
Well, we got to take a break. You're listening to American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks. My guest, Chris Gerner. We got a lot more to come. Stay tuned, and we'll have more on the other side of the break. Thank you.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil, because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the internet and following the instructions there to support us. Thank you for listening. Who are you? That is the question, and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule pages at firstamendmentradio.com for broadcast times. We'll see you then.
Day of economic uncertainty and soaring unemployment, safe investments are often hard to find. But investing in the precious metals is the safest investment of all, because gold and silver is real money. Government printed currency is not. Call Melody Cedarstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company at 1-800-375-4188. Melody has been helping people secure their financial future for over 10 years. While others in the business claim honesty, Melody will deliver. Give her a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, called American Exposé. Go to the website for American Exposé. That's AmericanExposé.com, spelled with a K, not a C. A lot of good research there. Also, we have partner sites there on the front page, SweetLiberty.org, another good, excellent research site. There's a United Nations section, regional governance, states' rights, a lot of good stuff there, and also the Anti-Communitarian League with Nikki Rapana in Nordica. That's my homepage, folks. I enjoy the research that they do. They've done a lot of work. You can tell the time that they've put into that. And it's all for you. It's for you to get up to speed as to what's going on so that we can try to make a difference and explore solutions. And also Sam and Trish's TheInformationCorner.com. A lot of good research information. Thanks to the Internet, something that they gave to us as a means of control. And yet we're able to use it to learn about their activities, the other side, and as this command and control structure is put into place. Now, Chris, we've explored a lot of various things before the break. You first came across this document called Agenda 21. I guess that would be the question. When did you first come across that document?
Well, first of all, you forgot to mention your website as a partner site. Which you're just a shy guy. You have an excellent website yourself.
Well, I appreciate that.
I'd heard of Agenda 21 way back in 1995 when Karen Lee Bixman was talking about the Biodiversity Treaty at the Granada Forum out there in the valley. But she dropped the ball. Most people drop the ball on Agenda 21, including myself. back in those early days of the 90s, mid-90s, because not much was talked about it. The President's Council on Sustainable Development was formed by Clinton by executive order because our Congress would not pass Agenda 21. And so what he did was create the President's Council on Sustainable Development, which I thoroughly believe stopped at the end of his administration. But the implementation of Agenda 21 through the State Department and the other government agencies is well underway. And it was May 1st of 2002, after I finished my show on Genesis Communications, I was dealing with all this various information that seemed to me to have a goal and an end result and a source. And it just clicked in my mind, shoot, it's Agenda 21, wake up. And I clicked on, I punched in Agenda 21 on the search engine, and that's what got it all started for me. It was May 1st of 2001. I left Genesis on May 13th because I knew how big it was. I was beating up on talk show hosts not talking about it, which I still do, because it's all-encompassing. It's everywhere. And for people not to talk about it, for people to keep it in the dark like they do that have the responsibility on the airwaves, I think it's a crime. I really do, because the way things are going to drastically change under Agenda 21, including the toilets that you buy that are only going to flush a certain amount of water, and the metering of the wells, which are going on in other parts of the state right now, and the country, you know, people have to know where this is coming from. And
right.
So it was way back in May 13th of 2002 that I decided, well, if I left there, people might start talking about it. And they didn't, and they haven't, and they don't. And it's just beyond me that they keep quiet about it. Everything connects to this dot in my thoughts, as every country has an Agenda 21 from the UN system.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you see a number of foreign sites that are implementing it in their country as well. The term sustainable development, what does that mean to you?
Population control. As far as I'm concerned, sustainable development is population control, what the population can and cannot do in the future. Including
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Including having to move out of the country into rural communities because you won't be able to afford to live out in the country, because you won't be able to afford to power your car to go into the town,
mm-hmm.
eventually. This to me is coming down the pike. It's going to be way too expensive to travel, and so we're going to have to move into these sustainable communities to survive, because gas will be either put into a real shortage condition, or it'll be way too expensive, and cars will be way too expensive. Cars are way too expensive right now.
Right.
Cars and trucks. Most people can't afford it, and they sign their life away when they buy a new vehicle and pay for it for 10 or 15 years, some of them. It makes no sense at all. When you talk about what's going to happen, what do I think about it? I look at the IMF and what they say, the International Monetary Fund. They say the work of the IMF is of three main topics. Surveillance involves the monitoring of economic and financial developments and the provision of policy advice aimed especially at crisis prevention. So what they're doing is they're monitoring the created crisis that we're living today.
Mm-hmm.
The IMF also lends to countries with balance of payments difficulties to provide temporary financing and to support policies aimed at correcting the underlying problems. Loans to low-income countries are also aimed especially at poverty reduction. Third, the IMF provides countries with technical assistance and training in its areas of expertise. So, and once again, what do? We have one of the chapters of Agenda 21, technology transfer. So
mm-hmm.
all this is coming into play, and the IMF is a major source of the direction of how it's going to go. So I just see sustainable development as meaning nothing more than population control, meaning what you can and can't do in the future.
It's interesting that they talk about how these you know, sustainable development, they define it as the ability for this generation to meet its needs without compromising the future generation's abilities to meet their needs. You know, and I always say this is a Marxist-type system because, well, what did he say? But that, you know, from each according to his ability to each according to his needs.
Right.
And we're seeing under this Agenda 21, all you have to do is read the first few chapters to see the massive redistribution of wealth program that's a part of that. And we cover the Asian tsunami situation where the United States is you know, redistributing wealth from here over to that part of the world. We've got funding programs in place for various aspects. I wonder how much money we're giving to Africa to try to help them with the AIDS crisis they have down there, which is probably another, created situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, the United States is funding everything, and you can only do that for so long until there's nothing left, especially when you have a job situation in this country where that's being taken away as well.
Absolutely, on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the frightening part about it all that most aren't realizing is that the jobs are disappearing. Millions of jobs, hundreds of thousands of jobs, put it that way, are leaving this country. And what kind of jobs do these people have once they lose their manufacturing basis? Just limited amount of service economy jobs. You can't even be a carpenter today and compete because you're competing against people from other countries, especially below the border, that will work for half the wage that you're used to making.
Mm-hmm.
So at this stage, things are moving into an ominous position, and the more people wake up and put the pressure on their representatives, the better things are going to be for all of us, because once we realize that things are being manipulated on purpose, then maybe we can make a stop to this to a certain degree. I'm not sure. This is so big. You have the International Institute for Sustainable Development, and they connect to the World Trade Organization, and they say the IISD's trade program has focused much attention to the World Trade Organization and how it might be made more responsible or responsive to the challenges posed by a concern for sustainable development. So this move to totally control us by the UN system under Agenda 21 is well underway. And then you see from the UN News Center, build up logistics cooperation with the private sector before next tsunami strikes, dated January 28th, meaning there's going to be another one. They know it. And they have a whole disaster reduction group in the UN system. It seems like they thrive on disaster to make them strong.
Ordo ab chao.
I've heard that before.
Order out of chaos.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it blows me away to know that every aspect of our lives from cradle to grave is being controlled.
Yeah.
You know, and most people live from cradle to grave and never even realize this.
And the worst part about it is the documentation's on the internet.
Right. It's all there, hidden in plain view.
There you have it.
And maybe that's what our purpose is on Earth, is to try to unravel the lies and help others to see the light of truth. I want to come back to something. You mentioned something a moment ago, saying that you don't know if it could be stopped. And the bottom line is, I think most of us believe that there is a chance, if we wake up enough people, that we can stop this thing. I mean, the whole purpose, our goal, our desire is to stop it, or at the very least to slow it down.
Yeah.
And but I believe that as a God-fearing, God-loving American and somebody who has compassion for our fellow humans, there's going to be people, Chris, that's going to live here on this earth after we're gone. So I believe as people who know the truth, even if there wasn't a chance for us to stop this thing, even if there wasn't a chance for us to completely bring this thing to a halt, I think it would still be our duty to do what we're doing. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that all of my past has brought me to this, and certainly I've had my exposure of waking people up. A lot of people know who I am all over the world, and without me and what I've done, I'm sure that the world would be a lot worse off today. Same with others, a few others, a handful of others. So I certainly realize that my purpose has been to do this, and I appreciate all the work you've done on the website, bringing the Congressional Medal to the surface, because I think that's very, very important, the Congressional Medal of Honor, the upside-down five-pointed star, Lucifer's blinking symbol.
Right.
You know, I mean...
Gives you an idea who's in charge, doesn't it?
It really does tell you something that is so obvious, and most people don't even think twice about it, but that's because they've been dumbed down on purpose. I mean, the dumbing down process starting in the 1930s. I mean, Charlotte Isaby certainly chronicled that very well in her Deliberate Dumbing Down of America book. Where would we be without her book? Where would we be without Joan Vion's books? The Global Straitjacket, the United Nations Global Straitjacket, goes hand in hand with the United Nations book entitled Our Global Neighborhood. Those two books working hand in hand with each other are very good for educating people, and I highly recommend them both. One of them from the UN system, one of them from Joan Vion. But without certain people writing certain books, and G. Edward Griffin way back when, back in 62, the Fearful Master, without getting to this direction of these people informing us the way they have, we wouldn't be as successful as we are in our endeavor to wake people up. Now, 2005 is a critical time. They want to pass the Law of the Sea Treaty. They want to, or the convention. They want to control our vitamins and minerals. They want to pass this Kyoto Protocol to the point where we're embarrassed not to be a part of it. So 2005 is a very, in my opinion, a very pivotal year. And it's very important to do the best we can to get the information out to others so they can jump on board to do their informing.
You know, I remember reading in the speech by Dr. Lawrence Dunnigan, as I guess it was actually Richard Day speaking, but it's Lawrence Dunnigan reviewing it, and it's called The New Order of the Barbarians. They mentioned in there that they were the year 2000, they were going to start the new millennium running. And it's kind of interesting that right after the millennium happened, you know, here comes September 11th, this war which takes us into every corner of the world. We have this the acceleration of all of these things, including natural, so-called natural disasters, you know. And I got a piece here from, it was from The Independent, as so many good pieces come from The Independent. Mm-hmm. Global warming is twice as bad as previously thought. Mm-hmm. You know, they're blaming all of these so-called natural disasters on global warming, which is something that they say we're causing. And it says, Harnish McRae, African nations have more to learn from China and India than the West. It says global warming might be twice as catastrophic as previously thought, flooding settlements on the British coast, and turning the interior into the unrecognizable tropical landscape the world's biggest study of climate change shows. And the question is, who's funding these studies? Who are these so-called scientists, you know, and
right.
who pays their check every week? You know, you notice how the media never quotes any of the many scientists that disagree with this global warming scenario, you know, or that we're causing it. Researchers from some of Britain's leading universities used computer modeling to predict that under the worst case scenario, London would be underwater. Underwater, and does that sound like more tsunamis?
Yep.
London would be underwater and winters banished to history as average temperatures in the UK soar up to 20 degrees Celsius higher than at present. Globally, average temperatures could reach 11 Celsius greater than today. Double the rise predicted by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the international body, there you go, international body set up to investigate global warming. So, I mean, they're using more and more of this scare situation to try to accelerate this Kyoto Protocol treaty to get us into this thing.
Yeah.
You know, Ordo ab Kale.
That's for sure. And we're being more and more dependent on foreign food that could be shut off at any time. They control us by what we eat. And here I see Internet Project forecast global warming. And it's news at nature.com. It says the greenhouse effect, and this is dated the 26th of January. The greenhouse effect could be far more severe than experts had previously predicted, according to results from the world's biggest climate modeling study. In the worst-case scenario, doubling carbon dioxide levels compared with pre-industrial times increases global temperatures by an average of more than 11 degrees centigrade. So, you know, you're connecting your dots with your information. I'm connecting my dots with my information, and we're both coming out at the same place. Totalitarian control under a UN system, which our government is fully cooperative with, whether President Bush signs the Kyoto Protocol or not, and that's the thing that bothers me more than anything else, is that non-governmental organizations and people like the Fish and Wildlife Service having partnerships with private landowners to you know, engineer the takeaway of their property, and they like it, you know. Here we see dated January 18th, 2005. Fish and Wildlife Service seeks proposals for funding through the Private Stewardship Grants Program. And this is all very, very interesting. The fact that the government is working with private landowners to steward their land, and when they die, it'll all go to the federal system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of you know, the government working with private landowners, there's a piece, I'm thinking this is from, no, it's from Milwaukee. It says, state to develop plan for growing ATV use, all-terrain vehicles. I know you had some experience with dirt biking back in, the 70s and 80s?
1970s, right.
Uh-huh. It's
a whole decade of excitement.
Yeah. No kidding. DNR board responds to demand for trails. With the use of all-terrain vehicles showing no sign of abating, the State Natural Resources Board approved a plan on Wednesday to help managers cope with what they see as a growing demand from the public to build more trails. The Department of Natural Resources said that 200,500 ATVs were registered in Wisconsin last year, the highest ever. Officials expect that ATV registrations will exceed snowmobiles in the coming years. Board members were told that the growing popularity of the vehicles is sparking demand for new places to ride. Today, most ATV use takes place in county forests, on private land, and in the Chequamegon portion of the Chequamegon Nicolet National Forest in northwestern Wisconsin. I'm not sure I pronounced that right. But there is less riding on state land, said Tim Miller, a park and trail manager, with much of the activity taking place in former railroad beds now owned by the state and the Black River Falls and Flambeau River State Forests and Richard Bong State Recreation Area. But more and more, Miller said, the agency is expecting ATV users to ask managers of state parks and wildlife and recreation areas and other lands to build new trails. No figures on the numbers of miles and state trails were available, but Miller estimated that there are thousands of miles of ATV trails on county lands, and they say working with landowners. They say in addition, he said that ATV groups are just beginning to work with landowners, as snowmobile groups do now, to gain rights of way on private land for longer trail systems. Board members said ATVs would become one of the biggest land use issues for the agency in the coming years. Gerald O'Brien of Stevens Point, chairman of the Natural Resources Board, says this is going to come on us big time. Another board member, Herbert Benke, likened ATVs to the explosion of mountain bike use in the southern unit of Kettle Moraine State Forest 10 years ago. Bikers started using cross-country ski trails, damaging them severely, and it was only then that the agency began regulating where bikes could go. And, you know, it goes on from there, but the point of the matter is, you know, they say they're protecting the land from damage. How do these bikes damage the land, I guess, is the first question. And the second question I have is, you know, from whom and for whom are they protecting the land if nobody's ever going to be able to use it?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I mean, once you put all this property off limits, you know, I mean, there's not going to be any left to use. You know, and that is left is going to be far over so heavily and contested so heavily that, you know, it's going to be, you're going to have to be so wealthy in order to have any land whatsoever that nobody in the general population is going to be able to have any.
Right. The more land there is to ride on, the less it becomes eroded. Land always recovers. Land has been here long before we showed up, and it's going to be here a lot longer after we leave. And the point is that the command and control structure of land use has been engineered through our federal system, and public land is becoming regulated now to where, there's hardly any land anymore that isn't regulated in one manner or another. And that is the point. Is the problem is being developed because land is being taken away. We're losing our ability to enjoy ourselves in our extracurricular activities off-road, sure, there are irresponsible people out there, but the more they learn about being responsible land users, the better it is. Off-road users shouldn't be abusers, and most of them aren't. And I remember many times in the past when I used to do this, we'd always take out more trash than we came in with. We loved the land. We loved using the land. And that is the situation that most off-road users are, that they love using the land and enjoy their activity, their extracurricular activity off-road. That's being taken away and being regulated monumentally. And I'm certainly glad I got it out of my system long ago, because I feel sorry for those today with what they're up against.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have any more thoughts, as I see we're getting close to the bottom of the top of the hour, actually?
Well, the websites that we have up there on AmericanExpose.com, including yours, are great avenues for learning the big picture. I don't think you have to go anywhere else. Between my website and the partner sites, I think that's all you need to spend time in. And the more people that do that, the better it is for our country and the better opportunities to make a change. And hopefully others working together will work on making that change. It's just not up to you and myself, Darren, and we know that, but others have to get on board, and that's our big concern, isn't it, Darren?
Right, absolutely. I feel like we've outlined a lot of the problems, but the key point here is involvement. You know, at the state and local level, let your representatives know how you feel. But you got to learn about all this stuff in order to be able to talk about it articulately enough and confidently enough to be able to share with your legislative leaders, you know. So thanks a lot for being with us, Chris.
My privilege.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris will be with you tomorrow night. I'll be back with you next week. God bless you. We hope you have a good night. Pray for this republic and do what you can to restore it.